This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling Network, welcome to episode number 8 of Wrestling's Chicken Salad, which is the first episode of 2021. My name's Ben Locke. I trust you all had a great Christmas and a Happy New Year. I am here as always with my two cohorts. First of all, as someone who was so excited this New Year's Eve, as it was the first time he was able to stay up past midnight. He's everybody's favourite little bitch. It's Logan Crosland. Logan, Happy New Year to you, sir.
Yeah, I finally got the courage to ask my parents to stay up past midnight this year, so it was a real exciting time, and I had a ton of drinks and drinks of apple juice, and I had a great time.
You don't want too big a sugar rush, mate.
I don't want to go too crazy.
start 2021, you know, with a good New Year's resolution and just go from there. That's what I say.
Absolutely.
My other co-host is a man who is so old, he is quite happy with the whole COVID situation that people can't go out because it means there's no fireworks, there's no people going to the discotheques listening to music for the hit parade. He is the king of the shit take himself, Mr. Sean Kidd. Sean, good evening to you, sir, and a very happy new year.
Good evening, Happy New Year, and it is, I'm not a fan of COVID, but it is good that people stay in their house, because as we know, I don't like many people, so if they stay at home, I don't have to deal with them, so, but not because of COVID, but Happy New Year, everybody.
You were tucked in by 9:30, weren't you?
I was lucky if I made it to midnight. 9 p.m., maybe.
Gentlemen, I have news though. Like, as most people know, every show so far we have done as a three-man team. Tonight we had a fourth person to the group, a special guest, if you will. When it came to having someone be our first guest, there was really only one man for the job. He is the unofficial fourth member of the Salad Crew. He's our George Martin, if you will, as he is the person who does all of the editing and music production for us. You will have heard him on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, as well as here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network as the host of Senior Video. He truly is a podcast legend and my fellow special relation. He is Mr. Rory McNamara. Good evening, Rory.
Good evening, all, and Happy New Year. Yes, well done, Ben, getting in podcast legend good and early. That is how it is done.
Well, you know, we've got you well trained
in this game now, haven't we?
Yes, but I think you've took me under your wing for like a year and a bit. So, you know, I'm getting there now.
Yeah.
You very
ben,
much
bringing
are.
Some class to the new year. a little bit of Rory class here in the new year. So, Rory, well, glad to have you.
Very, very glad to be here. No, if there's one thing this show needed, it's just a little sprinkling of class, you know. It's so rough around the edges. It's not without its charm, but a bit of refinement never goes.
Yeah. Just a little sprinkle of class, right? Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. We don't want to, you know, we're oversaturate the market or anything.
We're just here to bask in your glory, Rory.
So before we begin with the actual show tonight, I wanted just to mention the very sad news about the passing of John Hubert, otherwise known as Mr. Brody Lee in AAW or Luke Harper in the WWE, a man who's only 41 years of age. I will go to Sean first, as this is the first time we've been on a pod since his sad news. Any thoughts or feelings on the subject, Sean?
devastating news. And, you know, it was weird. I was actually thinking last week, and this is why it's so weird for me, is like, man, we haven't seen him since he had that big blow-off match with Cody on AEW. And then, of course, we found out why. But, yeah, you know what? You know, I think very unappreciated in his WWE run. I have fond memories of the Wyatt family, Shield matches that were off the chain, some all-time classics. Fond memories of him in AEW. I think one of the things that we can all say is at least he got that run that he deserved and the notoriety he deserved. Regardless of how people might feel about AEW, he got what he got, that shine that he needed and wanted and deserved, quite frankly, in his final run there, even though it was only 7 months. But great talent, great big man. I think we didn't even begin to see what his potential possibly could have been, but really, really big loss for the wrestling world.
Logan, any thoughts to give?
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of share everything that Sean just said. Very underappreciated, and yeah, he was really starting to come into his own as a really good big man in AEW. Would have been cool to see where he went from where he was. But you know, just reading through Twitter the last few days, nobody has a single bad thing to say about the guy. So he seems like he's a really good dude, and everybody loved him, and he was a great family man. So it's real tragic to see the good guys like that pass early, but it's just how things happen sometimes. But it's a big loss for the wrestling world for sure.
Definitely. Rory, as Logan alluded to, he seems to be a guy that nobody's got a bad word to say about.
No, and as Logan rightly says, you could look at anybody who's involved with pro wrestling, from the highest of highs to your local micro indie. They've all got a story about John Hubert, and it's all a story that will make you laugh, make you smile, and ultimately make you cry. You clearly cannot fake the outpouring of positivity that this man has actually done in his all too short life. And I think it was Big E who said it best, that we should all try to get to know somebody like John, because if we do, then all of our lives will be better. And I think that's a credo to live by. The fact we're talking about John Hubert in the past tense, from the age of just 41, is absolutely devastating. It really is. It's unspeakably sad. But yeah, if any good can come of this, is the fact that he was clearly such a wonderful, wonderful guy and something for us all to try to attain, I think. But it's just desperately, desperately sad. It really is.
Yeah, I think I've told this story. I've told part of my re-fandom, if you will. So I came back into the fold about 2011. So, and with the network, we got there in 2015. So the whole Wyatt family, Bludgeon Brothers, and then Brody Lee, I've lived through it all. You know, he's been one of the mainstays of my fandom of the last 5-6 years. I think it's the fact that, you know, I know we take the mick out of age on this show a lot, but the fact that he was only 2 years older than me as well, that's kind of shut me up a bit, I'll be honest. I'm going to say something that might be considered sacrilege. Just follow me through. I think he's going to be this generation's Owen Hart. And what I mean by that is, as we've all mentioned, you know, this is a guy that none of the boys and girls who work with him have got a single bad word to say about the guy. He's a family man. You know, he's the kind of guy that you all want in your workplace, just to get your spirit up, to keep everybody in a good mood, basically. And we all need a bit of that at the moment.
You know, the other thing I'd probably add to it, like, I'm really thinking through my head and I'm thinking, can you really come up with what you would call a really bad Brody Lee match or a really bad Luke Harper match? Because I finally remember watching most of his matches and truly being entertained by every single one of them. Whether it was Luke, yeah. whether he was in the Wyatt family, whether he was in AEW, his matches were always good, and I thought he already brought his best and was really one of the best big men out there. I really did.
I know, Rory, you've watched some of the stuff on the network, haven't you? They've already put the collection up. I know you've
done
that.
Yes, I have.
And it was like, and like Sean just said, when you actually see it distilled, it's like, bloody hell, he had some great matches.
It is tremendous. The match against Orton from Elimination Chamber 2017 in particular is one I would recommend people not to sleep on.
That's him and Ziggler had have good matches. I mean,
just yeah, him and Ziggler in that ladder match at TLC was
TLC
awesome.
14. Yeah. that's great too.
And of course, Logan, you've got that iconic shot from the Elimination Chamber. I want to say 2014, the Shield and the Wyatt family.
Mm-hmm. We all know that one. Mm-hmm, absolutely. And he really should have been in the main event or the WWE Championship match at WrestleMania 33 with Wyatt and Orton. I really think he kind of built himself up at that point, and he really kind of deserved to be in that match. Definitely. And, you know, it kind of ended up being a shit show, so it might have actually made it a little better if they had included him as well.
You wouldn't have done so well with the maggots, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so.
John Huber, rest in peace. I'm sure you're looking down on us all already. Thanks for the memories, my friend. Let's get off that subject before I start tearing up, because I might get emotional. I don't mean to. Okay, so the show we are going to be watching, we are going to be reviewing, sorry, tonight, was my pick. And as the world's number one Royal Rumble fan, this hurt me picking a Rumble. But I have gone for the Royal Rumble of 2006. So before we start the show, Logan, we have finally reached your teenage years.
Yep, I was 12 at this point, so I'm almost in junior high.
Sean, I think you alluded into the last episode. One of your children was already born at this stage.
My oldest son was a month old at this point in time. He was just born in December prior.
Rory, I think you're my age, aren't you? 39, I want to say.
38. Thank you, Benjamin.
Sorry. Look, I'm discrediting you there.
I love that he called you Benjamin.
I only get called that when I'm in trouble, Sean, so I know I'm in the bad books for a bit now. So we would have been, so what was that, 24, Rory? Did you watch this show live, or did you watch it the next day?
23, thank you, Benjamin.
23,
rather wisely, as it turned out, I was out on the product at this point. Must have had quite the premonition. I didn't really start watching again properly. It was 2006. It was for Unforgiven, in fact, where I was reeled back in by that marvellous Edge Cena match. But we had a while to get to before I was actually watching again. So I didn't watch this pay-per-view for a very long time after it happened. And I was quite happy to keep it that way until you came along.
I have this effect on people. I apologise. but I will stick with Rory for my next question, which is, what are your first memories of the Royal Rumble as a concept or as a pay-per-view, however you want to phrase it?
Yeah, always been a huge fan of the Rumble. First one I watched was Royal Rumble of 1996. So again, despite that, I still stayed hooked. The whole Royal Rumble, just talk about the match briefly. I've got a few things to say about the pay-per-view itself as we go. But Rumble match, it is like pizza and Gefurznigger sex, that even when it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Logan, what are your feelings of the Rumble match and the pay-per-view itself?
Rory, you're going to be excited. That was actually my first Royal Rumble that I ever watched, so 96 was my first one. But yeah, like you said, even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. I love the Royal Rumble. It's my favorite pay-per-view every year. So I always look forward to it, and I always really relish the time so I can watch back through them every year. So definitely one of my favorite concepts.
Sean, are you with us all on the Rumble train?
I am. I'm not on the 96 Rumble train. The first one I watched was the very first one in 1988 on the USA Network. Obviously,
of course it was
because it has to be, right? So anyway, it was interesting on USA. I felt like the first Rumble, when I first saw it, was more of a jobber kind of battle royal type thing. And obviously Hacksaw Jim Duggan won that one. Place to be nation favorite, obviously, Duggan. But, you know, it was a great concept, and then when it started hitting pay-per-view, it just built and built and built and got better and better. And once they got the big stars into it in 89, it really, you know, for me, it really shined. So 88, not so much, but once 89 hit, it's a must see for me every year. It's, I think Rory and Logan both said it. It's just one of those things, no matter how bad it is, it's good. So, and I think we have a good case of that tonight, possibly. So,
yeah, do you remember what I said about Survivor Series? You can take that and reverse it for my feelings on the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
Because guess what? This is a pay-per-view that has actual stakes involved. not just meaningless tag matches for the sake of it.
It wasn't always that way. In 88, there was no stakes for Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Thank God. No one wanted to see him get a title shot. So, thank God.
Well, Scott Criscolo might.
Doubtful.
Hogan and Duggan at the Silver Dome. I could see it now.
Mid-South Duggan versus Hogan, I would have been in on. But it wasn't Mid-South Duggan. So,
as I said, we are reviewing the 2006 edition of the Royal Rumble. So let us go to Miami, Florida. And gentlemen, you'll be pleased to know this is a place in America that I've actually been to. Usually I'm asking you about places, but I know Miami. I've been there twice and I enjoyed it both times. I'm guessing, Sean, you must have been for some work thing at some point.
I have been to Miami, yes. You know, from a work crew there, they're a little crazy down there. So they like their nightlife. They like their alcohol. And yeah, I like both of those. So yeah, Miami's a fun town.
sounds like my sort of place, Rory.
It does indeed. It's funny you should say that. This very day on the radio, Miami by Will Smith was playing. This stuff is not coincidence, is it?
Oh, I hate that song.
Our influence runs deep.
Yeah.
I'm going to Miami.
Miami. Yeah. It's
terrible song. Lying on the beach till the break.
This is why we have Rory around, you see, just for these musical interludes. did Miami come out in 2006?
No. 98.
Oh, wow. I was out of touch by music even by that point. Well,
it's really hard to figure out what year because, you know, all Will Smith did was sample songs, so it could have been any numerous songs that Will Smith did in 2006.
That is true. That is very true. Okay, so let's go to the opener of our show. For the crews are split into two this time, so we have got Michael Cole and Taz doing the SmackDown portion of the show, and Jerry Lawler and Joey Styles. How long had Joey been in the booth at this point, Sean? Can you remember?
Oh man, no, honestly, I don't remember. To be honest with you,
I know a man who does. I'm going to go to him next.
Revolution, wasn't he? Sorry, he was at New Year's Revolution as well, wasn't he?
Yes, yes,
that's right.
I believe was, so. Yes.
No, it wasn't Cyber Sunday. Was it Cyber Sunday? Was it one of them? Filling in for JR?
Yeah, it was Tabby Tuesday that year.
So there's no JR. It's Joey Styles with Jerry Lawler. And apart from a little bit in one match, he's more than passable at the job, which is good to see. We open our show with a six-way match for, I'm going to phrase it how they phrase it, the Cruiserweight Championship of the World. I don't know why they have to add the world. Does any of you know why they have to add the of the world on? Is Cruiserweight Champion not enough?
I think it was to make it sound like more important. I don't know. I think that was kind of the excuse they gave.
Well, it just made it sound more ridiculous, didn't it?
Well, the Cruiserweight title at this point in time is ridiculous. So.
That is true. So the six competitors in this match are Funaki, Jamie Noble, Nunzio, Paul London, making his return to SmackDown and the Cruiserweight division, Gregory Helms, and the Cruiserweight champion. I apologize in advance for this, Rory, but as I'm on with my fellow Impact Zoners, I'm going to have to do it. My name is Kid! There you go. That's it. That's my indulgence of the evening. Logan, I'm going to throw it over to you as our man, Mr. Kid Cash, is in this match. I thought this was all right. I thought it was okay. You know, not a pretty big spot fest at times, but yeah, this will do to open the show up.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was kind of your to go with our Highway to the Impact Zone stuff. It's kind of your crazy X Division fuck fest that kind of just goes crazy and is just crazy move after crazy move. But there was a lot of quick pins to start things off. Everybody was going for the quick pin to see if they could score the upset. I really thought that they made a big deal about Helms being from Raw. And they never let you forget that that was the case. And then everybody uses this as kind of an excuse to gang up on him to start the match. Jamie Noble hits a pretty awesome twisting power slam at one point. Nunzio has a move called the Sicilian Slice, and I thought that was hilarious when Michael Cole or Taz, whoever said it, I thought that was pretty funny. London does a crazy shooting star press dive to the outside on top of everybody. And then right before the end of the match, Cash hits his dead level brain buster. I'm always a big fan of the brain buster move. It was a really solid contest, and Helms kind of wins with the Shining Wizard on Noble. Or no, I think he hits it on Funaki, actually. But this was a really solid contest. Good opener, kind of gets the crowd up and excited. I went 2.5 on it.
Cracking. Sean, even though there wasn't any real flow to that, there was some really good moves. Like Logan mentioned, the shooting star press was pretty sweet from London, and I really like the top rope net breaker Helms did as well.
Yeah, I'm with Logan. I really enjoyed this match much more than I remember from the initial viewing. But a couple of things before the match. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that when I logged onto the network and saw the thumbnail graphic for this show, I wanted to talk about how immensely hot Stephanie McMahon was in that roaming gear. Because I sat there and I stared at that picture for a little bit before I actually turned it on. So I just have to mention that. I love the opening of the show, too. The voiceovers were amazing. It was just, and I just love the whole scene and the feel of the whole set and everything. I love the whole kind of Roman, hey, see your video kind of Coliseum kind of setting. That was kind of plugged there for Corey, or for Rory there. I just loved it. So I thought that was great. But as far as the match goes, the first thing I thought is when I saw Cash was champ, I said, wow, I can't get out of 2004 TNA. And so that kind of set me up for what I thought would be a disaster. But nah, this was good. Nunzio coming out to No Sleep Till Brooklyn, great value music by the Beastie Boys. Great music there. Paul London, I don't know what's going on with that creepy alien gold mask that he wears, but that was pretty solid. I thought Helms, like Logan said, they just kept bringing up Raw constantly, so you kind of saw what the end conclusion of the match was going to be. But I kind of like the look here with the leather trench with sleeveless trench coat. I thought that was pretty badass. But they all worked hard. The crowd didn't really seem to care too much because the cruiserweight doesn't really mean anything at this point. But you already talked about the big moves. You talked about Paul London's dive to the outside. He talked about Helms swinging neck breaker on London. And I really like Cash's brain buster looks savage. So Kid Cash definitely has the finishers that we all love from TNA and from this one. And I really like the finish with Helms, Noble, and Funaki. And I thought it was fun. Chaotic little sprint, and I also went 2.5. I really enjoyed it.
I really liked it as well. Rory, I as well as the match, I'd like you to talk about the standing room only comments that Michael Cole keep mentioned in an arena with quite clear red seating that you can actually see the gaps pretty damn clearly, as well as the aisle where people come in and out. It's quite clear to see that this is not quite the sellout they're making it out to be.
Yeah, very much so. The upper deck was plain for all to see, but somebody still managed to get in Michael Cole's ear, did they not? Just another comment on the graphic for this show. Don't disagree with Sean's comments about Stephanie, but I think Shane's expression rather sums up the remaining 2 hours and 30 minutes we'll be talking about after this opener anyway. But anyway, got to try to remain positive on this. So what I've done, in keeping with the spirit of Chicken Salad, is that I have only made positive notes before this show. Anything negative I say.
Don't worry, Rory. I'll counteract that for you. You're good.
Oh, well, there you go. Anything negative I'll do, A, I'll do from memory, or B, I'll just leave till Sean. So leave for Sean. So there we go. But some of the notes I got on this match that haven't been mentioned, although I'm going to mention again, the No Sleep Till Brooklyn knockoff. If you're going to have knockoff music, make it pretty accurate, and they have there. I'm rather surprised it hasn't been dubbed in on the network, because normally they're terrified of anything that sounds even remotely like its source music. I mean, DDP has lost his Smells Like Teen Spirit knockoff. Chris Jericho has his Even Flow one replaced by Break the Walls Down, inexplicably. But Dear Odd Nunzio can keep his No Sleep Till Brooklyn knockoff, so all is right with the world. I've got here that Paul London put in a capital performance. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I am indeed here all week. And there was some, I thought the finish was really well done. I thought they got the timing on that one absolutely down pat, right to the very millisecond. Helms in particular timed his introduction to get above for the Shining Wizard right on the money. So that was really good as well. I do question the wisdom of having a get everybody on the card match on the get everybody on the card pay-per-view, but stay positive. I'm also going 2.5. The action was good. It was fine. It was well spaced out. It did feel very spot festy. At times towards the end, you got the sense, especially with Helms, who I am a fan of, by the way, but you got the sense that if he's stealing a victory in the way that a heavyweight heel would, that these guys aren't really allowed to separate themselves from the style of the main roster. But that's WWE for you, I guess. You take what you're given in WWE land. But yeah, 2.5 from me, a lot of fun.
Yeah, I probably would have took, sorry, but if you take Nunzio and Funaki out of it, I would have been all right with a four-way. I bet that would have been a good banger with those four without those two.
Mm-hmm. All I was going to say is, just going off what, piggyback off what Rory was saying, is this is the WWE's version of what a cruiserweight spot fest should be. So we're not gonna get like, you know, Hoove and Blitzkrieg bobbing around the arena all night.
And Helms goes on from here to literally never ever defend the cruiserweight championship except like 2 or 3 times on pay per view till he loses it next year.
They never should have took it off Kid Cash.
I'm not saying, does he hold it for like a year or something?
Yeah, I think he loses it at No Way Out the next year, but he faces like Jerry Lawler on pay-per-view. He faces Matt Hardy like 4 or 5 times on pay-per-view. So, yeah,
that's right. So, after the end of this match, we cut backstage for our first backstage segment, which is Vince McMahon along with Teddy Long, and they are going to be doing the Royal Rumble draw together, except Vince decides he doesn't need Teddy Long's help with all this. Instead, he wants to set sexual equality back about 50 years by getting Tori Wilson, Victoria, and Candice Michelle involved. Mm. The first person who comes in to pick a number out is Randy Orton. He's able to pick his number, and he seems very, very pleased with the number he's picked. Triple H then comes into the room, does a bit of jaw-jacking with Randy. Innuendo with the girls follows, including a great read them and weep line, and will you just keep hold of my balls? I think he said it to Candice. yeah. And Triple H is not very happy with his number. This is a good segment, Logan, apart from Letty Vince.
Yeah, I said Vince and his devils were running the order drawing for the night, but I like the hold my balls for that he said this, to Candice, so I was a big fan of that one.
Not a lot more to say, so I'll move on to it, because I get the feeling we've got a lot of bile coming for the next match, so that bit was quite positive, I thought, so we'll keep it at that.
I got a lot to say on this too, Ben.
The next match, okay, all right, I'll go to you first then, how about that?
All right, that's okay, go ahead, go to the match.
So, our next segment is Trish and Mickie James in the back, where Mickie James decides to tell Trish that she's in love with her, which is not the sort of thing you tell a referee before a match. The match in question is Mickie James versus Ashley. And Sean, the floor is yours.
All right, so I want to go back pre-match first. Did anybody notice that when Teddy was talking to Vince, he said this is the first Rumble of 2006?
Yes.
Like, is there any other Rumbles in 2006? And then Vince made a real – I mean, there's a lot of bad Vince here. He makes a bad Farrakhan joke about Teddy's look. And then goddamn Vince booked himself as a sex addict. I thought the girls were smoking hot. Randy Orton's shirt I liked a lot. It was an RKO NWA knockoff shirt. I really liked that. Triple H with his prime Motorhead mutton chop look, and his arms just look freaking ridiculous, like he's huge. And then there's a lot of different Triple H comments. You already brought up, hold my balls, this feels good. But he also made a comment about Tori to open the box for him, open her box for him. So, So I'll jump right into the match. I thought the angle at this point with Mickie was really, really good. The I love you added an additional element. I think Mickie James was really, really good in this feud and this buildup. And Ashley, as we know, is kind of the middleman. All of a sudden, she's Trish Stratus's best friend, which seemed to come out of the blue. Jerry says Trish is hotter than usual. Styles calls Mickie a whack job, and Lawler tells him to be objective, which I thought was funny because Lawler's never objective. Calls her more nuts than planners. This is obviously the biggest spot Ashley has ever been in, the middleman in the story. Lawler says he wants to be Trish's shirt to be inappropriate some more. Styles made a really stupid comment that Ashley has really great fundamentals of wrestling and quite the superstar. And then everything Ashley does just seems slow-mo. She had a clothesline off the apron. It was okay. but, yeah, this match is not great. It's just kind of here to, you know, progress the storyline of where we're going to go to at WrestleMania. And I think it served its storyline purpose, but I can't go any more than 3/4 of a star. It's not a good match whatsoever, and it's just here to
progress the story.
What?
Oh, no.
Listen, there's a match on this show that's way worse than this one. And this progressed the story, and it was a necessity to get to where they want to go. And here I go with my context, which you're going to shit on, as you always do, you little punk. But go ahead.
Logan, do you want to have a rebuttal at Mr. Kidd?
Oh, 3/4 of a star. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I'm gonna kill the positivity gimmick here. I made the note about the planners joke saying King told Styles his family is more nuts than planners. I thought that was pretty good. Ashley's music when she comes out is like the most basic, like superstar music number one on like a video game or something like that. The crowd chants puppies 5 seconds into the match. My next note is lock up, arm bar, arm drag, rinse, repeat. Cause for the first 2 or 3 minutes of the match, it's literally lock up, arm bar, arm drag. Ashley probably should have never, been in the ring at all. But at this point, she definitely didn't have any business being in the ring. She's so slow. Everything you can tell is just like super choreographed by her. Her punches and kicks are like the weakest I've ever seen. Mickie does her best and is very aggressive throughout the match. This is a dud. I was not a fan of this match, and it was just horrible.
Wow. Trish
is actually not a very good ref. She's pretty bad in this match, but yeah, I didn't like this at all.
but she looks great though. She can be as bad a ref as she wants. Rory, where are you standing on this? Are you leaning towards Sean or Logan or somewhere else?
Let's see, shall we? I appreciate there might be a little bit of bias here because my very first note for this match reads Mickie in general. No. So you can probably guess where I'm going to be coming from on this one. But Ashley, the effort was there, if nothing else. The spirit was willing, but the flesh certainly wasn't fresh, and the flesh was extremely weak. Mickie's, no, didn't intend to be a joke. Mickie's fisherman suplex which a woman suplex, I suppose, was an absolute peach. Looked really beautiful. I think we have to make mention too when Trish is counting pinfalls. She does so like she's doing the 8 a.m. Christmas Day swim in the Serpentine. Seriously, go back and watch it. She's doing the front crawl, I promise. Watch it on slow motion. You'll see her bites. The finish was sick as F, as I have written, trying not to curse on what is a family show. Oh, no, sorry, Ben. That's the other one, isn't it?
That's, yeah. We're all right. We can F in Jeff on here.
Finish. There we go. I can do it here. I'm not sure it was intended to be quite as brutal with that sort of Ganso bomb off the top that Ashley did take right on the top of her bonce, but nevertheless, I thought Trish hesitating on the three count was a very good touch. I thought she carried that off well. And that celebration, oh my, I've written at the end. Again, I appreciate a lot of built-in bias here. So I actually went a star, one whole shiny snowflake on this one.
Brilliant.
Entirely for Mickey James' own existence and the general excellence of the storyline at this point. But no, if we're quibbling over three quarters of a star versus a star versus a big fat dud, I think our listeners are smart enough to know that the source material here ain't
great.
All that.
I appreciate you on this podcast, and I would like you on every episode from this point on. Thank you very much.
Logan, you'll be pleased to hear that I'm with you, mate. I actually thought this was business exposure, and I went minus one. Yes.
Minus one?
Yeah, Jesus. I thought it was just long, it was plodding, it was boring. Some of that stuff Ashley was doing was terrible. Like you say, Mickey tried her best, but when you work with a duff brand to begin with, you know, she can only do so much.
I can't wait to hear what you guys have the next match on, because you guys are out of your fucking minds.
I thought there was enough story stuff here to carry it, which I think was really the point. You had enough of that.
Story stuff for this match is very good, I'll admit. But the match just...
Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that, because I'll agree with what Rory said about the hesitation on the three count. I did like that. That was quite a good touch.
Yeah.
So we go backstage.
One more thing about storyline, very, very quickly at this
go
point.
On.
If I was doing this for wrestling 20 years ago, which I will be in 5 years' time, yay, then I wouldn't be able to jump ahead. Here I can say, one thing I do like about the storyline, and if you watch the timeline for this one on the network, which is excellent, you can see it there too, that Trish is one step ahead and she does actually know what's going on. I think the storyline wouldn't quite have worked as well if Trish was oblivious to it, but she knows what's going on, but perhaps doesn't really want to believe it. I think she plays that very well here as well.
I'd agree with that. So we go backstage yet again to Vince and his little harem, where they are joined by the Big Show, who draws his number, or gets one of the girls to draw his number, I should say, because his hand can't fit in the tumbler. And Rey Mysterio comes in to draw his number, but he thinks Rey is ribbing him from heaven because, well, the number he has picked. We'll get into more detail about it in the Rumble, Sean, but the whole Rey thing, Rey Eddie thing, I was very uncomfortable with at the time, and it's still not great even today.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally... what, 2 months, maybe a little over 2 months since Eddie passed, and it's just really overkill, really overdone. And you know, I get what they're trying to do with Rey and the feel good story, but just the dialogue and things they say, and you know, it's just weird. It doesn't feel good. It's awkward. And then of course we know, we'll talk about it in a Rumble, they ride this train for a long, long time, and this whole segment was weird. You know, lecherous Vince talking about tats and doesn't want to see BS tats, tries to look at, I think, the dog's tattoo. I mean, this whole thing is just terrible.
And speaking of terrible, we go to the ring for our third match of the night. Sean wanted to know our opinion of it, Logan. I'll throw it straight to you first. We're talking JBL and the Boogeyman. One of my notes I've got is the Boogeyman gives me hope that I can still become a pro wrestler.
Yeah, I was going to say, he gives you a little bit of hope at least. I'm going to go pre-match real quick.
Yeah.
Taz is talking about Boogeyman when he ate the growth off of Jillian's face a couple of weeks ago on SmackDown.
The cancerous
but he
growth.
Said, yeah, the cancerous growth, sorry. but he says when that happened, it was a real moon pie moment. I popped so hard when he said that. So, I really used to like Boogeyman's entrance with the clock and everything and the crazy dancing and all that, but that was about where my love for him ended. I made the note that I think Jillian's one of those divas that was like a little low-key hotter than everybody else gave her credit for. But before the match, he kind of mounts Jillian and loogies a worm on her chest. And it almost goes in her mouth. But JBL has to bend the rules to get any offense in this match, and Boogie wins with a pump handle slam about a minute and a half in, it seemed like. But I'm going to go a quarter star for the loogie worm.
Sean, I'm guessing that obviously feet are your number one gross out thing, but feeding a girl worms is going to be a close number two.
Listen, if I was going to rank this on comments, the one that Logan did mention that really popped me, Taz says that when he gnawed off the cancerous growth, the Boogeyman sucked the juices out of it. And Michael Cole like tried everything he could not to bust out laughing when he said it, but it was so gross, and it just popped me a little bit. The Boogeyman's kind of like the OG Fiend / Papa Shango. It probably would have been a really great 80s gimmick. You brought up the assault on Jillian. I thought that was really disturbing. This is all punches and kicks. And, you know, I was shocked that JBL lost so easily. This was really, really bad. And the fact that you would rate this above the last match is quite, I don't get it. But I went done on this one. This match is fucking awful.
Rory, I will say, because obviously this show being for 15 years ago, as it is, as we go out onto air, I was quite happy with Michael Cole recapping all those gross out moments from the Boogeyman, because, you know, you forget what a wonderful character he really was.
You do forget, don't you? The Boogeyman, as I discovered today, is actually also a hidden character on WWE 2K Battlegrounds. Not that I'm going to be trying too hard to unlock it.
Oh, wow.
as if that game wasn't cartoony enough, the Boogeyman is going to be a character at some point down the line. Yes, I've got one line of positivity for this one, other than, of course, Jillian, who has rightly been mentioned earlier. I have one positive line here. Yeah, okay, the hand on the chest pin is good. And that's all I've got, a quarter of a star. And it did. Okay, I will say this. It was JBL who's the recipient, and it couldn't happen to a nicer person. So there is that.
Sean, you'll be pleased to know I only went dud on this. So okay. Yeah, I did think it was better than the last match. And the reason I scored it better was because of the fact it was short and nothing was botched. That is literally it.
Mm-hmm. But it's terrible. It's terrible.
Well, you know, I'll take your Lane Award nomination now.
Logan's gonna get it on the dud for the last match, unless something else got worse comes up.
Okay.
Oh, fuck you.
You see what I have to put up with, Rory? It's like I'm a referee here. It's great.
Patience of a saint, Mr. Law. But again, wouldn't have it any other way, would you? Be honest with yourself.
Well, you know, we do our best round here. We go backstage again after the end of this match, and we are joined by Shelton Benjamin drawing his number out. But not just Shelton Benjamin. I don't know how I forgot about this, but I forgot all about Shelton's mama. So it was I popped quite hard when she came on screen. I was like, oh, it's this show, great. But that's just me. I'm a bit weird like that.
No, I popped when she came on too, especially when she grabbed Vince's ass. That popped me.
And she said, the last time I saw you, your pants were around your ankles.
Yes.
Vince is equal opportunities if nothing else.
The character of Mama was played by a professional actress, was she not?
Correct.
Yes, that sounds right.
Yep, she was.
You can tell as well.
Yeah, she did. I think she's passed away. I think she passed away a couple years ago too.
Yes, I think I remember hearing that. Yes.
Yeah. Oh. But she was like a professional comedian.
Something
like that. Yeah.
So after Shelton and his mama leave the room, we are then joined by Eminem and Melina, who come in, draw their numbers, moan about the working conditions on SmackDown, but also promise Vince that they will eliminate Shawn Michaels for him. Nice little bit of foreshadowing of what was to come, Shawn, I felt, it was like a little Easter egg, this bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and Eminem, I really liked them back in the day. They're a great tag team. I love the fur coats. But here's my take on Melina, and I think I texted this in the group chat. I don't think Melina's that hot or that cute compared to the other ones. This might be my shit take tonight of the night, but I just didn't really get Melina. I was never really a fan of hers, and I don't know, just didn't understand her too much. I didn't get it.
Did you get it, Logan?
No, I'm kind of with Sean. The screaming shit that she did was annoying, and she wasn't ever really like even in the top like five or six hottest divas that they ever had. So at any point, I actually agree with Sean for once.
And let's not miss the fact again to bring up that Vince wants the dog in this little wants to take a look at the dog stuff too. So Vince a little horny devil tonight, a little disturbing.
I was never a fan of Melina either. Are you going to complete the clean sweep, Rory? Or are you going to be the lone voice?
I very much am. I never got it on any level, let's say, with Melina. But as so often, Bret the Hitman Hart did, 3 years from here, he would call her the best wrestler in the world. So chew on that.
Sunny days for Melina.
After Eminem leave the room, Vince and the girls settle down on the couch whilst Vince is trying to look at the dog's tattoo. They are going to get ready for the Royal Rumble, which is our next match, which we will be covering in the second part of our show, where we have also got two world title matches. So, for Rory McNamara, Sean Kidd, and Logan Crosland, we will see you on the other side. Wrestling Network, welcome back to episode number 8 of Wrestling Chicken Salad. My name is Ben Rock. I am here as always with Sean Kidd and Logan Crosland. We are joined by our special guest Rory McNamara, and we will get back to the Royal Rumble 2006 very shortly. But first, I want to tell you about some of the great shows and feeds across this here network. First of all, December's special Sunday series has the return of Marty Sleaze. Marty and Jerome from Pro Wrestling Only continue their five-part series, counting down their 25 best TNA and Impact matches of all time. They are on part four, which is going to be matches 10 through 6. On episode 567 of the Place to Be podcast, Scott and Justin are joined by Andy Atherton to reminisce and review SummerSlam 1991. On the final episode of With This Ring for 2020, Ryan and Cindy watch The Best of Starrcade. And on the farewell episode of You Don't Know Billy Jack, Drew and Jordan watch Okada versus Omega from Wrestle Kingdom 2017. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us. You can find the Place to Be Wrestling Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon. Just search for the Place to Be Wrestling Network and you will find it. Also, check out the Place to Be Nation of Pop feed with some great shows that include The Year in Pop, Laughing Theatre, The Great Debate, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, A Piece of the Action, Making Mount Rushmore, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. And while you're in the subscribing mood, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. First of all, Jenny Smith's The Jenny Position is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Driving, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and much more. Also, check out the new North South Connection. I don't suppose it's new anymore. It's about a year old. It's a bit weird calling it new, but the North South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It's the official home of Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, The Gang Gets a an Always Sunny podcast, The Ruthlessly Aggressive podcast, TNA Never Dies, Shrink Wrapped, Rank and File, and much more. Join our rejuvenated Place to Be discussion group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, look up Place to Be, and request an invite. Discussions and fun with wrestling, movies, tournaments, and all forms of pop culture can be found there. Be sure to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. There are new voices and fresh takes bringing new articles and topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent SmackDown on Fox Reports, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And if you're doing any online shopping from Amazon, be sure to click on the banner on the right-hand side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon, and it will take you right to Amazon themselves and will help out PTBN at no cost to you. But what PTBN are also selling is some fine merchandise that you can't get on Amazon. You have to go somewhere else to get it. But as always, I cannot tell you what these fine pieces of merchandise are. I know a man who can, and he is your friend of mine. He is Mr. Joe Fowler in the Chicken Salad Control Center. Joe, it's over to you.
Joe Fowler here in the Chicken Salad Control Center, and I would like to tell you to check out our new PTB Wrestling Network store and show off your favorite podcast logos on great merchandise like t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and more. Just go to www.tpublic.com and type PTBW in the search bar. Hank, where are you getting on this chicken salad merch? All right, Joe, I've actually made some headway on that. I talked to Mr. Chris Scolo himself at what I believe was called the Special Relations Christmas Party, now on the PTBN Wrestling feed. and I told him my demands, and if he doesn't pull through, the Chicken Salad Express is coming for him. Well, Hank, I would hate to be that Chris Scolo fella, but back to you, Ben, across the pond.
I don't know about you, Rory, but I would not want to be on the wrong side of Hank.
Somebody you definitely do not want to annoy.
I am amazed, Sean, that he's managed to get Scott's private number and tracked him down.
I guess at the office party, he tracked him down. So Scott's been very quiet, so maybe he's working on the merch as we speak.
Absolutely. It's coming. And as the man is here on the podcast with us, of course, the best piece of merchandise you can get is the Senior Video mug.
Of course.
Yes, of course. Yeah. It's up there. I'm looking at it as we speak, actually, right now.
Takes pride in my kitchen.
Just the kitchen, okay.
Yeah. I've not used it yet. It's just there as an ornament.
Gathering dust.
So, let us go back to Miami, Florida for the Royal Rumble 2006, and we are at the Royal Rumble itself. Sean, the mid-card Rumble, would you call this?
It's a little weird, right? The mid-show Royal Rumble being in the middle, it's a little odd, and probably even odder, and I'll let the other guys speak, but a little odder considering the two other matches we have after it. I just think it's a weird call.
But as we are talking things positive, Rory, there was a really good video package that was played just before this match that ran down all the runners and riders for you if you don't quite remember 2006 properly.
I love all the Rumble video packages. I think shortly after this, we started getting the numbers one, which they would then update every year. It gets you pumped and hyped for it. They get it right every time. They really do. And 06 in this case, no exception.
It is excellent. But after the video package, Logan, we get some prime gimmick work from the Spirit Squad. They come out and do a nice cheer for everybody before the match starts.
The Rumble. 30 men in all. The Rumble. 29 will fall.
Of course you wrote it down.
Of course you knew that.
Oh, I could never forget it. But yeah, the Spirit Squad, as awful of an idea as it was, you got to appreciate the dedication it took for all those guys to put themselves out there like that. So, but yeah, kind of a strange way to start a Rumble, but.
I the promo video before the Rumble I thought was really good. And, you know, it's interesting, some of the good stuff I forgot. Like, do you guys remember Triple H and the Big Show having a pretty decent feud and match, like, right before this Rumble? I mean, it was actually a pretty good feud. And I also forgot about the Benoit and Orton and Booker T stuff. There was actually some good stuff going on in this Rumble, and I love that they promo videoed it before the Rumble. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, the video is great. The video is tremendous.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
I just want to quickly mention there about the Spirit Squad. Everybody knows Dolph Ziggler is a member of the Spirit Squad, but he has no idea about that chant or routine, does he? He's like a step behind. He's lip syncing to it. It's like, oh, Dolph, all you got to do is learn four lines, mate. That was literally it. That's your one job.
Well, you get the job for what? The next 14 years? Because you don't remember it. So.
So the way we're going to recap this Rumble, as you know, we don't particularly do match reviews on this pod. We're going to break it down into segments of five people at a time, and then we'll talk about things that happen in those five people's 90 seconds, however you want to phrase it. So we open up with Triple H at number one.
Sorry, just before we begin, Benny, can I just drop in one very quick thing on this? I hope none of us missed Lillian calling it the Royal Wongle.
Now, the last man standing will be the winner of the Royal Wumble.
Oh, yeah. I made the same thing.
The Royal Wongle, yes.
Again, she had one job.
She had to say a lot of stuff. I'll give her a break on that one.
I like Lillian. Well, yeah, we'll let her off there. But Royal Wongle. Yeah. That should have caught on.
So we open up with Triple H with the number one pick. So you could tell why he was unhappy backstage. And number two is Rey Mysterio carrying on the whole Eddie gimmick by coming out in the lowrider and doing his mannerisms as he was going. I thought the start was a really good start, really quick, open. They were both hitting big moves on each other. Ray nearly gets 619 on Triple H. This carries three comes out. It was Simon Dean, a personal favorite of mine. I'll freely admit, if you know, on my guilty pleasure list, if JT has Akeem, I have Simon Dean, damn it. But he doesn't like. He only lasts about a minute and gets eliminated by Triple H and Mysterio pretty damn quickly. Number four is Psychosis of the Mexicools. Him and Ray do a bit of a lucha sequence, but this isn't WCW in 96. This is 10 years on, and the brain is willing, but the body is not able, I should say. Psychosis does go for a powerbomb, gets countered into a head scissor by Ray into the elimination. Entry number five is Ric Flair. Picking up on what Sean said, they had him and Triple H had a pretty hot feud in the end of 2005. So they go right at it. But Flair gets eliminated pretty quick as well when he gets backdripped over the top rope by Triple H. Logan, I thought a pretty good start to the Rumble, this.
Yeah, when it's just Triple H and Mysterio, the first 90 seconds are pretty active. They go at it pretty much the whole time before Simon Dean comes out. Dean thinks he threw Rey Mysterio out and kind of looks for approval from Triple H, and Triple H just absolutely decks him, and then he gets thrown out seconds later. I was really sad Psychosis didn't come out on the Juan Deere. I wish he had come out on the lawnmower like they used to. That would have been given it a couple extra points for me. But the head scissor kind of counter that he does to get Psychosis out of the match was pretty good. And I said Flair and Triple H still have major bad blood, so they immediately go after it when Flair comes in, and Flair just does ball grabs, chops, and eye pokes, but then eventually gets eliminated by Triple H. But yeah, a hot first five.
Yeah, this was some classic Flair going on, wasn't it, Sean?
Yeah, I enjoyed the first, like, we're doing this by five. I really enjoyed the opening moments of this. Going back to the Spirit Squad, you know, you also have to mention Kenny, who they pushed as a really big star post Spirit Squad, and I guess he got squashed by Cena to get him out. But I made the comment he looked like Great Value Johnny from The Karate Kid. So if you watch The Karate Kid and look at Kenny, they're actually the same person. So yeah, Triple H and Ray was great right out of the gate. They got Ray coming out in a lowrider. So again, really pushing this do it for Eddie agenda, which I get. I understand why they're doing it. It just seems really uncomfortable for me. The crowd was all about it. But it was good for Ray to face like a really big star in Triple H at the start. Not much to say on Simon Dean. I'm sorry. He's one of your hidden gem favorites with his little purple suit. thankfully, he was out quick. Psychosis, the Mexicools. Yeah, a little degrading there on the Mexicools. I won't get into that too much. driving the tractor, it's just, I don't know. I don't like it when they like kind of do these. You know, it just seems wrong to do that from a diversity standpoint. So that didn't really hit home for me. And yes, Flair, it's pretty crazy to me that Triple H and Flair had a hot feud, and I feel like Triple H and Big Show in late 2005, early 2006 had a good feud too. So it's crazy that Triple H has had good feuds with both these guys who have kind of been around the block a while, and I really enjoyed both those feuds. But yeah, it was a really, really good opening stretch with the first five. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Rory, there seemed to be quite a gap between like really good wrestlers, you know, upper mid-card main event talent, and there was some really bad gimmicks in this match. And we saw that pretty much sprinkled all throughout the match.
We did. I think here it was a fairly good selection and it set the tone quite nicely. Numbers one and two, and by the time you get to Flair being eliminated from number five, you pretty much know what the story is going to be. And that's fine. Simon Dean, lower card jobber, Psychosis, fun high-flying guy, and Ric Flair, the cachet speaks for itself. Those are the three people you can eliminate within no more than a minute each at the early stage of a Royal Rumble. And so it lays the groundwork for the fact that both Triple H and Ray are going to be here for a long time. And I think it was probably wise to alert the crowd to that. Here, the crowd are very into it. The excellent 90-second exchange from numbers one and two. The crowd were into that right from the very first bell. And I do think it was wise so they could peak and trough accordingly, the crowd, and I'll talk about that a bit later on, by letting them know that, okay, these are the two you're going to have to beat. So, yeah, that was very wise booking, I thought, and it was the right group of people to throw out early.
Yeah, definitely worked. So there we go to number six, who is the Big Show, who, as Sean mentioned, has got beef with Triple H. So those two go right at it. And we get our first mention of skillet hands. Is this a thing in America where anybody over a certain height has got hands like skillets, Sean? That seems like something you would know.
I don't know if it's a thing in America, but apparently I guess it is. I don't know.
is the coach who got through on the last Raw before the Rumble. He tries to attack the Big Show from behind, but gets pie-faced straight out of the ring. They could have had him get like some like chokeslam or something as well. Triple H tries to attack during this distraction, but gets press slammed down for his troubles. Eight is Bobby Lashley. I've got in brackets, please don't ever call him a black or a dark horse, Michael. It doesn't work. wrong choice of, seriously, wrong choice of words there. There is a great face-off, though, between Lashley and the Big Show. Show goes for a chokeslam, but Lashley is able to backdrop Show, who rolls out of the ring. And that was such an impressive feat of strength. Even if he has to duck down low and you see the hand go on the back on the replay, I still enjoyed it. Number 9 is Kane, who is the Big Show's tag team partner. He goes straight for Lashley. Big Boot puts Lashley down, but he then gets up and hits a belly-to-belly and a Dominator on Kane. Again, another impressive feat of strength. And speaking of our gimmick jobbers, number 10 is Sylvain, who is the SmackDown fashion consultant. He attacks Lashley from behind, gets hit 3 times, but then is able to eliminate Sylvain pretty much straight away. Rory, this carries on our excellent run of Rumble competitors.
Every pro wrestling TV show needs a fashion consultant, does it not? Yes. This little portion was all about Lashley, actually. He got to look very impressive, and you can tell that at this point they were, at the very least, testing the waters for him. It's taken a long time to properly happen, as we record this, no less 15 years on. But here you could see he's going to win the bloody thing. There you go. if I can say dark horse pick for 2021. There you go. But yes, he was allowed to look good here. The Dominator on Kane, I'm afraid to say, I didn't put in my notes because it was terrible. Kane's head was nowhere near the mat, but no matter. This is all about making him a bit of a threat, and I think it was successful. At least it was until we get to our next portion of 5.
Yes.
So, unfortunately, though, Sean, Lashley then does get eliminated pretty much straight away after eliminating Sylvain, because he gets a double chokeslam from Kane and the Big Show.
Well, how he was eliminated made sense, because these guys were a pretty dominant team at the time. But going back to what – well, first off, let me go back a little ways. So let's go to Coach. Coach, again, you know, we go back to the Great Values, and I know that's a different podcast, but dress is Great Value Rock. Because he had Rock wear on, I guess, 99 Jim Rock wear, like Rumble wear. and this just proved when Lashley is booked right, he's a beast. Like, he looked so great in this. And let's also mention that Ray has really done nothing but lay around this whole time in this whole conversation. So Ray hasn't done very much. But, you know, he goes at it with Kane. He talked to belly. I think he press slammed Triple H during this time, too, did he not?
There was
a press slam. You brought up the Dominator, and I thought Lashley just like a freaking beast. And this is how he should have been booked when he came back, and he hasn't been booked this way. And I'd be all in on the 2021 win for Lashley. Actually, I liked Bobby Lashley back here, and I liked him during his Impact Wrestling run when he went over there and he was world champion. And I feel like we still haven't gotten the best one we could get in current times, but. Absolutely loved him in this little segment. I thought he was great.
He was indeed. This was really all about Lashley, this sort of 5-10 minutes, wasn't it, Logan?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll go back to the Big Show comes in and just, you know, waylays on Triple H. And then when Coach comes in, he quickly dispatches of him. But yeah, and then Lashley comes in and it kind of has a face off for the Battle of the Hosses between him and Big Show. I think it kind of shows how big Big Show truly is, because he kind of makes Lashley look pretty small, just since tallness wise, at least. But yeah, I kind of agree with Sean a little bit. I think if Lashley's heart had been in it during this run, he really could have been like a huge star, and I think he could have gone a long way. But I just don't think he was fully committed at this point, so I think it's just that kind of what held him back. But yeah, he quickly dispatches of Sylvain, and then he gets a double choke slammed and taken out by the tag team champs. So, yeah, good portion for Lashley there.
Well, we know how big the Big Show is. He's got skillet hands, Logan. listen to what Michael Cole tells us.
Didn't Michael Cole once say it must be like being hit by a giant typewriter?
Oh, yes, he did.
Well, you ever watch Big Show lay in a chop? Literally, I don't know how it doesn't kill somebody. I mean, it's scary.
It permanently damaged Kofi Kingston's chest.
Caved it in.
That's why he has that weird cave-in thing in his chest, is because Big Show chopped him in it, like, I don't know, like something fucked it up. I don't know. True story.
Our next portion of the match begins with number 11, who is Carlito. He goes after both Rey and Triple H, hits an unnamed backstabber on Rey. Triple H tries to take over, but Carlito is just too fresh at this point, and he rolls on until number 12 comes out, who is Chris Benoit. He does a great German really suplex on Mysterio, as well as one to Triple H. He puts Carlito in the crossface. There's an unfortunate bit of commentary from Michael Cole where he says he's not going to last much longer, and boy, was that the truth. Triple H puts Benoit on top, on the top rope, but Benoit is able to headbutt him down and hits a flying headbutt. 13 is a still injured Booker T. There's a bit of back and forth between him and Benoit, who is able then to hip toss Booker T over the top rope, which ends his night in about 30 seconds. 14 is Joey Mercury of Eminem, who goes right for Carlito. Things slow down at this point, as four of the guys are going to be in this match pretty much to the end. 15 is another mark out moment for yours truly, when Tatanka makes his ring return to the WWE. I think we've established my Tatanka love on various podcasts on this network.
Chicken salad favorite, Tatanka.
Absolutely. That's who we need to book next, Sean.
Yeah, I'll work on that. We can talk about King of the Ring 95.
Yeah, I can't do that impression. I'm not even going to try. Yeah.
He goes into the ring and gives tomahawk chops to everybody. There's also a seminal chant from the Miami crowd, and the six guys pair up in the ring. I don't know about you, Logan, but at this point, I think around when Booker T got eliminated, this is where the match started to really slow down for me.
Yeah, this is kind of when the ring started to fill up. The backstabber that Carlito hits on Mysterio is freaking brutal. He completely demolishes him. But yeah, then Benoit comes in and he hits chop suplexes and cross faces. Oh my. And then I made the note that Benoit's headbutts just always make me uncomfortable now, knowing what damage he was doing into his head. But Booker then comes out and he has his long pants on. He used to wear long pants when he was in Harlem Heat, but ever since he was a singles, he kind of went to the short tights, so it's kind of weird seeing him in pants. But he kind of comes in overzealous and almost immediately gets thrown out by Benoit. Mercury comes out after that, and I always like the little where they hung the tag team championships from their belts. I always really liked that when Eminem did that. I thought that was a nice touch. I also made a note that poor Mercury doesn't have any idea what's coming for him at the end of the year with his face explosion and all that. Then my last note for this round is Tatanka comes out to exactly no reaction at all, as deserved. So
Tatanka gets no reaction.
This was when it started to kind of slow down and the ring started to fill up a little bit.
Am I right in saying that? I think Rory will probably know. Was it a groin injury Booker had? Is that why he had the long tights on?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. But yeah, so like Logan mentioned, like 11 and 12 was really good where Carlito and Chris Benoit came into the ring, but things sort of went rolling down the hill from then on.
Yeah, see, this is kind of, for me, where the current malaise that a lot of the Rumble matches, as we record this and take place since, do fall into. As much as we like Carlito's back cracker, as it would be called at this point, he wasn't a heel, and Benoit throwing the suplexes around, it does give rise to the fact that before long, this is how all Royal Rumbles would be structured. Somebody comes in, pop for their music, flurry of moves, get knocked down, wait around until it's their time to be eliminated almost. You can see signs of that creeping in here, and knowing where it goes, it's not always the most fun watch. But all that stuff from Benoit looked, and I'm going to say the word, brutal. There's no other synonym for it. I kind of wish there was. But otherwise, other than your boy Tatanka not making good his promise from the WrestleMania rap that Tatanka will be successful, there's not a whole lot going on in this video.
Of course you know what the WrestleMania rap is. That's, you know, I would expect nothing less. like Rory's mentioned, Sean, this was a very front-loaded Rumble, which, you know, it is starting to sort of go rapidly down the drain here in the middle portion.
Yeah, I hate saying that. You know, I know it's almost blasphemous to enjoy Benoit, but, you know, when he comes in and starts lighting like Logan said, everyone up with their chops and suplexes, and, you know, him and Triple H always match up well. And I was glad King Booker got out quick, because, as everyone knows, I am a self-proclaimed Booker T hater, because I think he's terrible and overrated. and by the way, Logan and I are totally agreeing way too much tonight, because I'm with him on Tatanka with his beer gut chopping up and down, running around in the ring looking like an idiot. So, Logan, I agree with you on Tatanka. Not a fan, and you're right, the crowd that could care less. Like, I would imagine sitting in that crowd and out came Tatanka, it probably sounded like a fart in church. I mean, it was just totally taking the air out of the whole entire building.
How dare you all? How dare you all? Knocking my boy.
King of the Ring 95, I is forever etched in my memory. So.
Yeah, I'm ruined from that pay-per-view, but I love how Cole actually points out that they're in Miami, which is Florida State's like biggest rival in football, and they were doing the Seminole Florida State chant. So I love how he pointed that out, and they were like, "That's not what they're supposed to be doing around these parts."
Well, Rory said, this is the start of the whole WWE trying to program the fans, and, you know, nobody's allowed to have an opinion and all that.
And I know when we think 2006 WWE, we all think Tatanka, so.
We haven't even got to Tatanka and Matt Hardy yet.
Oh, God. Well, I have a bigger Matt Hardy moment, so that surpasses
Yes. That's still to come, guys. That's still to come. So number 16 is Johnny Nitro, who runs straight into Tatanka. Not a lot is going on at this point. Benoit almost eliminates Triple H. My notes for the next several people are not very long, but we'll go into them. 17 is Trevor Murdoch. The ring is filling up. Ray is able to skin the cat for the third time, and then does a Road Dog style death grip on the bottom rope. A bit of Royal Rumble 2000 callback there. 18 is Eugene making his return from injury. He gets into a fight with Murdoch. So Eugene is able to hulk up and does an airplane spin. Whilst both men are dizzy, Rey Mysterio is able to hit a double bulldog, which I thought was a pretty sweet move, to be fair.
Yeah, that was good.
19, if we're talking saggy man boobs, here's Animal.
Okay. Now, let's have some respect right now.
Again, Michael Cole starts with the standing room only line. Michael, we can see the red seats. Stop it. 20 is the returning Rob Van Dam, who gets cut off by Eminem. Carlito does some great hiding in the corner because he knows RVD is out to get him. In this whole run, though, RVD backdrops Animal over. Thanks for coming, Animal. You know, that 2 minutes was well worth the time. Carlito uses this distraction to then attack RVD. I'll go to Sean first. It was great seeing RVD back out there. It'd been a year since he'd been in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, the ill-fated... was it after the ECW run, I think, at this point?
Well, he
I'm trying to remember timing-wise. Why was he out?
He got injured right at the beginning of 05. So it was, I think he said it was his idea for the ECW show.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's still coming up. So yeah, because we have the WrestleMania match with Foley and So no, listen, it was great to see RVD back. RVD is another one who, you know, early on they didn't strike while the iron was hot with him, and thankfully ECW One Night Stand they do. However, he shits the bed on it, and it's his own fault. But it is good to see him back here. And you know, I got to be careful what I say about. I did love the Ray spot with the double bulldog. That was nice. And then with the Animal, the only note I made about Animal was him and Tatanka were competing for the biggest gut of the whole Rumble. So that's the only other note I made. But I don't want to speak ill of Road Warrior Animal, obviously. But that's the note I had.
Well, exactly. Rory, I can just imagine that you are a Eugene man.
Where did that come from?
I might be saying that slightly tongue-in-cheek.
I shudder to think where you made the connection there, Ben, and I'm not even going to ask you why. I'm not going to let my curiosity get the better of me. I am not a Eugene man. I'm a Nick Dinsmore man. Fine worker, no doubt about it. But now, with the benefit of distance, the whole Eugene character is very uncomfortable to watch. I don't think pro wrestling is the medium to present a character like that, because you can't tell the stories with the respect that they deserve. And I don't think they ever really uncovered what it was that, let's say, made Eugene tick as a character, to be polite. And it has not. I don't think it was especially great viewing at the time, but now with 15 years distance, it's rather cringe-making, unfortunately. And it's a shame, because what I've seen of Nick Dinsmore, I think he was an excellent worker, but there you go. All the notes I've got for this section, very simple. RVD is smoking over. And you know I mean business, because I've written over O-V-A-H.
Did you put exclamation points after as well?
Exclamation marks, yes, I did.
Excellent. Like Rory said, this particular section until RVD came out is, again, very dull, isn't it, Logan?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure Eugene even gets booed when he comes out, so I made the note of poor guy. They immediately start booing him, so I kind of felt bad for poor old Eugene. But you kind of mentioned it, Nitro, when he comes in, he gets absolutely crushed by a right hand from Tatanka. But the Animal then also comes in and just completely levels Eminem with a big double lariat. And like Rory just said, the crowd is on fire for RVD. He comes in and is just, he's the most over guy in the match so far. Maybe outside of Mysterio to start out things, but yeah, they're really pumped for RVD in this one.
Absolutely. Number 21 is the opposite of over and on fire. It is Orlando Jordan. Yes, he's still around. Jesus. And there's still not a lot going on when he comes in the ring. They don't even give him, you know, that spot they give people in the Rumble where they get to hit moves. He just goes straight to punching and kicking somebody on the floor. I didn't even mention
it's a gentleman entry, Ben, like we like to call it. The gentleman the entry.
I'm going to leave that one well alone, Sean. Number 22 is Chavo Guerrero. Why is he even in the match when you're having Ray do the Eddie tribute?
Because they need him to ride the train too. They need him to ride the Eddie train.
He doesn't get to ride the train very long, because he literally does the Three Amigos, goes up to the top rope, and gets pushed out by Triple H.
So Chavo Guerrero. Very simple question, Ben. You could have left it at why is he even?
Yeah, just saying, why is Chavo Guerrero?
Why is Chavo Guerrero? Yeah.
23 is Matt Hardy, and Eminem attack him, but he is able to take over on both Mercury and Nitro. But at this point, Tatanka tries to help him, but then gets eliminated himself by Eminem.
What a shame.
24. Yes, it was. I cried. 24 is Super Crazy, who comes off the top rope and hits a crossbody onto Eminem. There's still lots of punching and kicking and hanging onto the ropes going on, but not an awful lot of excitement until number 25 comes in, who is the Heartbreak Kid himself, Shawn Michaels. He attacks everybody and is able to eliminate Trevor Murdoch. I will go to Logan first. Let's use Rory's question. Chavo Guerrero, why?
Yeah, I made kind of a mean note against Chavo. Chavo comes in and gets possibly the only positive reaction he ever got in his career. And then Triple H dumps him like the little bitch that he is, and that really pisses off Ray. Ray goes after Triple H after he dumped his buddy, but yeah, he dumps Chavo like a little bitch. But I made the note when Orlando Jordan came out, my, how he's fallen in a year. He was the United States champion and had just beaten John Cena for the title and was a major part of JBL's cabinet. So, I mean, he couldn't be further from where he was a year ago. So it's kind of sad. But HBK drew a very great number despite the boss being pissed at him. So if you would have thought that they were running that storyline coming into the show, he probably would have gotten a worser number, but coming in at 25 is pretty solid for him. And then whenever he comes in, all the heels kind of try to start going for Sean because they're trying to, you know, kind of impress Vince, and hopefully Vince will give them a special prize for throwing him out or something like that.
Well, you'd like to hope and think so. Sean, again, let's ask the question, Orlando Jordan, why?
There is no why for Orlando Jordan. And Chavo, I guess the only thing I could figure out with Chavo is that someone named Guerrero had a condom that broke, and we got Chavo Guerrero that came out of that. So that is why we have a Chavo Guerrero. The Eddie train, again, it's like very, very adamant here. I just don't understand why we need to have them both going, and it's kind of a waste to do the three amigos, and then he gets tossed out. So, but luckily he was out quick. Matt Hardy, I think we need to talk about how underrated his version 2 theme song is. How great is that song?
Oh, it's tremendous.
Yes. So, and then he brought up Super Crazy, had a nice into the ring dive on Eminem, and then HBK obviously comes in a ball of fire, but kind of a ho-hum here with Orlando and then Chavo. Matt Hardy's okay, and then Super Crazy, and then HBK, but it's just kind of a lackluster thing going on right now. It's kind of dull here in the middle parts of this.
Yeah, they're lining up everybody for the end segment, aren't they, Rory?
They are indeed. Matt Hardy's music, Live for the Moment, by Monster Magnet, by the way, who are a great band. And
yes, really I love that song.
Tremendous band. Seen him live a few times. Really great stuff. That was his music for years, wasn't it, as well? And rightly so.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did he keep
much it, better than Modest.
Modest.
to the top.
Hey, Sean, can you slap a tornado is the more important question.
I don't know. I've never tried to slap a tornado.
I thought if anybody would have tried, it would have been useful. If anybody could, it would have been useful. There you go.
Sean, the correct answer to that was, whoa, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I just remember the whoa, yeah. That's the only part. That's the only thing. The minute I hear the whoa, yeah, I get off. I love that part. Oh, yeah. Can you slap a tornado? Okay, yeah, you got me. Sorry, Logan. I was going to say, I bet you slap your tornado quite a bit. But
you're old in the show there. You didn't get the joke. I'm sorry.
I didn't know, and I had to make up for it. I apologize. I didn't get the joke. I suck.
How coarse of you, Sean.
I love how that Rory's here. Like, you can't make coarse jokes because we all have to be prim and proper for Rory. You guys suck.
No, we don't.
How little you know. Just back to the Royal Rumble of 2006. So just my notes for this section. Again, very simple. HBK really, thank you. HBK really rips it up when he gets in there and at just the right time. Because that was a long middle section, was it not? From probably about number 12 to number 24, was going on. And HBK was, RVD's overness aside, so HBK was there just when he needed to be.
I would say from Booker T's entrance on, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Oh, that's when things really slowed down. But we get to the last 5 entrants in the match. Number 26 is Chris Masters, the Masterpiece. I am loving the sticky pads he has stuck on that robe. That was a lovely little touch. He goes straight for Matt Hardy. Then Triple H gets involved, and him and Hardy take it in turns to be nearly eliminated. They're like having an elimination off between them both. 27 is Viscera, who goes straight after Hardy, hits a rather vicious Samoan drop on Matt Hardy, and then does the Viscera on Hardy, which I know Sean wants to talk about quite in depth, so I'm going to leave that for him. Michael Cole then getting a line fed to him about the fact that, oh, Viscera's worn purple and yellow before, hasn't he? Shut up, Michael. Stop trying to be funny. 28, Shelton Benjamin. Eugene gets eliminated during his entrance by Benoit. 29 is Goldust, who goes straight after Eminem. There are still far too many bodies in the ring, however. 30 is Randy Orton, who eliminates Benoit straight away. There is an RKO by Viscera, who then eliminates Masters, and who then gets eliminated by Chris Masters and Carlito. Carlito is then able to double-cross Masters and eliminates him. Goldust hits the punt on Carlito, but then gets eliminated by RVD. Orlando Jordan somehow is still in there, but he then gets eliminated by Randy Orton. And I will cut it off there until we get to the next part, because Sean really wants to talk about Viscera. So, Sean, go for it.
Well, the first note I'll make, Chris Masters, I feel like they could have done a lot more with him. Kind of like the narcissist when Luger could have been, like, I felt like he could have been a modern day narcissist if they had done it right. And he had some good stuff, but nothing great long term. Yeah, the Viscera, it's not more, it's very disturbing. He comes out to his porn music and his purple parachute. Like, he looks like he's wearing a parachute when he comes to the ring. He kills Hardy with a Samoan drop. Then he does the Rick Rude over him. And then literally humps him from behind. And, like, anally assaults Matt Hardy. And this is probably one of the most disturbing visuals I've ever seen in the Rumble. I don't know how I don't remember this. But basically, he sodomizes him. And then he tosses him out of the ring and eliminates him. It's like Matt Hardy. Like, what did Matt Hardy, like, who did he piss off to, like, have Viscera do this to him? It was awful. Benjamin, the only note I have here about Benjamin being in this is his mama was in a muumuu, which I popped big for mama in the muumuu. I think she looked fantastic. And the other note I also made was the ring was very full. And it kind of got chaotic from here. But that Viscera moment, I mean, I had a hard time getting out of my head. That disturbed me a lot. So it really did.
Yeah. So once we get to number 30, Logan, rather than spacing the eliminations out, they come thick and fast in this last bit.
Yeah, absolutely. When Masters came out, I made the note that his entrance is super underrated. I always loved his entrance when he came out with the sparklers and the different poses that he did. But yeah, before Michael Cole actually made the comment about Viscera's outfit, I actually said he was wearing purple and gold pajamas, calling back to his royal days. So I actually made that comment before I heard Cole make it. But yeah, then in Sean's favorite moment, he anally rapes Hardy. So that was disturbing to see as well. And I would be so pissed.
Is that slapping a tornado?
Possibly, I guess.
All right.
I'd be so pissed if I was Hardy and I got dumped by a jobber like Viscera. So, I mean, that's so embarrassing. And then when Goldust came out, I didn't really make many notes for when Benjamin came out. He kind of came in and went right back out, so he didn't make much of an impression. But when Goldust came out, I made the note that none of the legends that they used in this one really hit very hard, because they don't really react to Goldust coming out either, and they really didn't react to Tatanka or Animal. So, you know, some years the legends spots are pretty cool, but I really don't think they hit very well this year. And then Randy comes out, and I made the note that I kind of prefer his older theme that he came out to this time, and that he immediately dumps Benoit. And then, like you said, Masters and Carlito kind of team up and dump Viscera out of the match, and then Carlito actually turns on Masters because they had kind of been partners a little bit before this, and he actually turns on Masters and throws him out as well. Goldust kicks Carlito in the balls and then gets dumped out by RVD, and I think that's kind of when you cut off, so I'll stop talking.
You're okay, you're okay. Do you consider this little bit of time like one of Orton's best periods, this sort of 2005-2006 period, Rory?
Yeah, and it needed to be because his late 2004, early 2005 period, I think we can safely call one of his worst. So
yes,
he needed to bounce back, and he did. And I really do like this period of Orton. Him being number 30, getting to eliminate somebody like Chris Benoit straight away. You know that the rebuilding process is well and truly underway, and then some at this point. And with the kind of character he should be. God, that babyface run just gives me the shivers. And bursting out of the cake, the monkey promo. Oh, just completely misguided. That's a discussion for another day. But one more thing I want to say about this, about Matt Hardy, because we're all talking about it. Probably fair to say that he drew the short straw, pun intended, with Viscera. Probably as a result of Survivor Series 2005, when he very much no-sold the Undertaker's return. If we remember that, he was
not. Oh, yeah.
So I wonder.
Good point. Good point. To do it. Yes, yes. The petty way they are in this company, you would not be surprised, would you?
Mm-hmm. Very possible. And finally, we're getting the ring cleared out now as well. Not before
yes.
time.
So this next little bit I've done, we're going to go. We're going to go into the Shawn Michaels Triple H segment, and then we'll get to the final four. So Triple H and Shawn then go at it. Eminem decide to double team Shawn, but Shawn is able to eliminate both men. Well, one of Eminem eliminates the other by getting headbutted battering ram style by Shawn. Shelton is able to take Shawn down, but Shawn super kicks him out. Vince McMahon leaves his girls in the back and comes out to provide the distraction to Shawn, so Shane McMahon can sneak up from behind to eliminate him, which sets up the match at WrestleMania. Shawn goes back in to attack, but Triple H cuts him off and the McMahon scarper. RVD is able to eliminate Carlito with a spin kick. Shawn, apart from the very leathery face of Vince and Shawn Michaels, this segment was pretty damn good, I thought.
It was good, and it sets up the WrestleMania match, which is kind of an underrated match for me. I kind of like it. But unfortunately, it also sets up the whole God storyline and that whole tag team match that we're going to see later down the road. But yeah, it's a pretty nice outcome, nice storyline. I like the storyline progression that it sets up for WrestleMania, so I was okay with it.
Yeah, I also liked Logan the bit where they're walking back to the back, and Vince is like, "You don't want to hit me, you want to get him."
Yeah, I don't know if they had like a no touch Vince clause or something going on at this point, but like he actively made it seem like he needed to go after Shane. But yeah, the face off with Triple H and Shawn was pretty cool there in the bit, or there for a little bit, and then HBK kind of throws out both Eminem members and Shelton, so he gets rid of all the guys trying to collect the bounty on him. So but yeah, him getting dumped by Shane is kind of screwy, but it does set up the match at WrestleMania, and that is one of my absolute underrated favorites in WrestleMania history. So
yeah,
Logan, we're agreeing way too much tonight on stuff.
I'm a big fan of that Vince Shawn match as well. To be fair, I like the Vince Shane match as well. But the Vince Shawn match,
yeah.
Is great.
Yeah.
Rory, that whole bit with Triple H coming to the McMahon's aid was one of them you know that we know that you know moments, wasn't it?
And I wonder who made sure that we know about it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, good storyline advancement there. I do wish that they hadn't made Shawn look like their archetypal dumb baby face. I mean, there was a way you could do this without the distraction, i.e. doing it any other way. Just have Shane blindside him. Then have Vince come out and taunt him. I just, the whole distraction thing, it's nobody should ever fall for that, you know, especially not somebody like Shawn Michaels. But nevertheless, it got them to where they wanted to go, and that match at WrestleMania 22 is a lot of fun, so nobody really loses.
Absolutely. So for the final part, I'm going to go from the final four right to the end of the match, so then you can give your thoughts after, gentlemen. So we have got Triple H, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, and Rob Van Dam as the final four.
That's a pretty good final.
That's
a really good final four. Really good.
Absolutely.
We start with a double team by RVD and Mysterio on both Triple H and Orton. RVD goes up to the top but gets crotched, and then Mysterio is used as a lawn dart to eliminate RVD. Triple H and Orton double team Rey, but he is able to counter. There's a double 619 that Rey that also is able to hit his seated senton on Orton, but Triple H takes his head off with a clothesline. Orton goes for an RKO, but is hit by the spine buster by Triple H. During this melee, Rey is able to scissor Triple H over, but after he gets eliminated, Triple H takes Rey out on the outside and throws him into the steel steps. Randy Orton, when Triple H rolls Rey back into the ring, spends too long gloating and taking Rey too lightly. He puts him up on his shoulder, but Rey is able to hurricanrana him over for the win. Logan, I thought this end bit was really, really good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this end bit is really, really strong with all four guys, especially Triple H, Orton, and Mysterio. Triple H plays the asshole that got eliminated in a way that he wasn't very happy about. So he kind of takes out Rey, and then, like you said, Orton kind of gets overconfident and goes to kind of dump Rey out, and Rey turns the tables on him and actually wins the match. And as much as Michael Cole gets kind of panned for his commentary, I think this is one of his better calls at the end of this match, when he's like, "Mysterio did it! He won the war!" You know, but yeah, I think this is one of Michael Cole's better calls here at the end of this match.
Interesting. Like you say, Rory, this was a really good final four, I thought.
It was. I might not have loved entirely how they got there, but when you look at the names involved, you can look past that, really. And I thought the three eliminations here were exceptionally well done. They really were. I thought the timing on RVD's was especially good. That sort of thing could have come across as rather hokey, but it was as believable as it could be. So that's good. Rey catching a quick one on Triple H worked well as well. And Triple H had to look strong at the end, but, you know, we all know that was coming, so almost didn't need to mention it, but I still did. Has been a complete revolution here. And Orton getting overconfident at the end suits his asshole character.
Absolutely.
Somebody like HBK getting distracted by Vince walking down the aisle, I can't buy. Randy Orton being the shithead that he is, thinking he can get away with just sauntering about the ring when there are two people left, and overlooking, just for a split second, that Rey is the sort of person who could hurricanrana him out of the ring, does make sense. So yeah, really good ending that fit the characters and the situation, and I've got no complaints about the final four at all.
Sure, like Rory said, there was some really good character work going on in this match.
There was a lot of good counter work, and, you know, how do they do, like, weren't RVD, Triple H, and Rey Mysterio, what a great final four to kind of set Rey up for the shine he gets. You brought up the spot with RVD lifting Rey up, and they do that double leg drop to Triple H was nice. I thought RVD's elimination made sense. Rey fighting for his life against the company's arguably two biggest stars at the time, Orton and Triple H. This is what they needed to do to make Rey great, and unfortunately, long-term, we know they screw this whole thing up, but this is a great feel-good moment at the Rumble. I know they're pushing this Eddie agenda, Rey doing it for Eddie or whatever, but they did this all right. This whole ending, this whole segment, the way they did this ending of this Rumble was just what it needed to be. And it's a shame, you know, because we know right after this Rumble, Rey kind of goes on a losing streak before he gets to WrestleMania, and then his world title reign's kind of a joke. But this one is good. They did it right here, but they got it right. So I know we don't typically rate Rumbles, but if I were to rate this Rumble, I'd probably give it a solid 3.5, and I really enjoyed the ending. It's probably one of the better endings they've had. I enjoyed it a lot.
I've rated it. I've gone 3.25, so we're in the same ballpark. I don't think you've rated it, have you, Rory?
I haven't given it a star rating. No, I think it is tough to star rate Royal Rumbles because the makeup of the match is so different to your standard one. And the metrics are very different. You can't really base them on work rate. It's really about moments and storylines. So it's probably a little unfair. But if I was to, for the sake of this and the company I'm keeping, I'd probably go 3.25 as well. I think it was a tick above average. It only really existed for two things. The setup, Michaels versus Vince at WrestleMania, and for Ray to do what Ray did. And he did. And well, by those...
Don't forget Viscera assaulting Hardy.
He's always doing positives here, Sean.
Oh, that's right. Rory's doing positive. I'm sorry, Rory.
But by those standards, Viscera not included, this Rumble probably acquitted itself. It wasn't a very ambitious match, and that stretched from 12 to 25, with the possible exception of RVD, really ground things down. Is very stodgy, and that's a period of about what 30 35 minutes with a whole lot of nothing going on, but a decent start, a very strong finish. I think there are, I won't list them now, but they're probably a good 4 or 5 at the very least Royal Rumble matches that I would watch after watching this one. Not a classic, but it achieved its goals. I'll give it that.
Yeah, definitely. Logan, you got anything else you want to add, or shall we go on?
I'll add a few things. I think Sean kind of talked me up to it. I think I'll go 3.5 with him. I always enjoy the Royal Rumble. This one had a really strong start and a really strong finish. The middle portion got kind of boring at points, but I really think Triple H kind of held the match together, and I really thought Carlito kind of came out of nowhere and kind of helped him help hold this match together. He lasted a good long while, and I think he kind of showed out a little bit in this match, so I was really impressed by him. This Rumble gets panned for Ray kind of laying around the whole match, and I can't disagree with that kind of idea that's a thing. He from the point where he takes the backstabber from Carlito till about the last 6 or 7 people in the match, he really doesn't do much, and he does a lot of laying around. But I mean, at a certain point, it's a Royal Rumble. It's going to last at least 60 minutes. I mean, you can't constantly be going, or you would just be absolutely wasted and almost dead by the end of the match. So, I mean, I get where people are coming from with that one, but like at the same time, you can't constantly go for 60 minutes. I mean, even the Iron Man matches that there have been throughout history, they don't go all the way for 60 minutes. They may go, some may go a little harder than others, but I mean, that's just a hard ask to do, ask of someone. And I think he really pulled out the stops at the beginning and the end, and those two parts of the match were really good. So
yeah, you've got to take a rest every now and again, haven't you? You can't be going for an hour full on like that. But yeah, and like you said right at the beginning, actually. Some good commentary from Cole, I thought, at the end, the whole like doing the whole Viva La Raza thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So after Ray's finished celebrating in the ring, we go backstage where Mickey James is trying to make amends with Trish Stratus, which does not go very well at all. She again reiterates the fact that she's in love with Trish, then walks away with Trish running after her. We then cut again backstage where Ray is getting congratulated by Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, and Chavo Guerrero, but then gets mocked by Edge and Lita, who warn him not to use the championship loophole to get the match with Edge at WrestleMania. From there, we go to one half of our main event, which is John Cena versus Edge for the WWE title. I'll stick with Logan. I thought, again, a pretty good match, but we know that these two could do a lot better, which would come up later in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the TLC match they have later in the year is one of my favorites. But You can tell how this match is going to go just from how the entrances go, because Cena basically enters from what Joey Styles calls a spaceship-type catwalk. So he comes out on that, and Edge gets a basic-ass entrance. So I wonder who's going to win this one. Both men kind of come in aggressive, throwing bombs at each other. Edge hits a brutal spear into the steps at one point. I really like that move. Edge is actively trying to win at any cost. He even kind of throws Cena into the crowd at one point and doesn't really go after him. It kind of allows him to get counted out, but he gets back right at 9, I think. At one point, Edge hits a pretty cool missile dropkick from the top. I thought that was pretty good. And I guess if you were going to book Edge to lose this match and kind of bury him like weeks into his title reign, I guess it was good that they kind of let him completely dominate this match, because Cena really doesn't get a ton of offense in this match. But Edge makes one mistake, missing the spear in the corner, and then Cena kind of hits his moves of doom and gets him to tap to the STFU. But I went 2.25 on this one. I thought it was all right, but it wasn't their best.
No, I'd agree with that. Sean, Edge, though, learning how to play the chicken shit heel very well, I thought.
Yeah, heel Edge is really good and, I think, underrated. I think the match, obviously, they've had a lot better. It felt very house show. It didn't feel like a main event at a Royal Rumble. I feel like if I had gone to the arena and watched a house show, this is a match I would have got. I thought the video going into the match was really good. I remember, like, yesterday, Edge's cash-in at the New Year's Resolution pay-per-view was probably one of the all-time greatest cash-ins. I was a big fan of Edge at the time, and I think this cash-in made Edge a star. It makes you question why they did that, if he was just going to lose a few weeks later, but I think what they were – my guess would be they wanted Edge to have a big win over Cena and then give Cena a big win over Edge, because both of them had really big matches going into WrestleMania, so – Edge would be facing Foley and Cena would be facing Triple H, so it's kind of even keeled in terms of them both having big wins going into it, even though Edge suffered the loss before going into it, but he still had a solid win. Like I said, Edge, very good heel work. I made a comment about Lita being hot, but she's probably in the smell club, so I have to put that in there, but she is very, very hot. Very, very hot, but in the smell club. But yeah, not a good match overall. It was just very blah, very boring, and it's just mind-blowing to me that they didn't put Ray's win as the main event. And that should have probably made us – that's probably what it should have been a sign of what was to come for Rey Mysterio long-term, that his win a couple months after Eddie died and this big push for him is not even the main event. But I went 2 stars, and that's a gentleman 2 stars. They have better matches. And like you said, Edge dominated and Cena didn't really do jack shit. So
He did do jack shit, but Rory, he got that pretty sweet entrance that Logan's already mentioned.
Yes, good entrance. Yeah.
He did, walking on that scaffolding that we're going to euphemistically call a spaceship. I don't know how you'd get very far with this. It looked like Meccano multiplied 100 times, like a big block in the middle with spider's legs coming out of it. I suppose we could call it a spaceship if we were being charitable, which on this show we need to be, but spaceship as a description is probably pushing things a little bit, but nevertheless, we shall go on. Edge's old school heel tactics in this one showed that he was the perfect foil for Cena's, let's call it, fighting spirit. And indeed, Cena got a largely positive response from the crowd here, I noticed. Not too many boos at this point, but I think it's testament to Edge's character work and was the person that Cena needed to be pitted against. Fans are a lot smarter in the mid-2000s. They're going to see through him going over Jericho, him going over Angle. That was the start of the problems, really. Here, by having Edge being such an arsehead, who it's impossible to cheer, even the smarkiest spark who ever smarked, that's the character Cena needed. And it was really working, finally, at this point. Edge's spear to the steps. Oh, I've got a big ouch against that one. That was huge. I loved his mocking of the "you can't see me." That was a real treat. And I definitely agree with the boys that Cena did very little on offense in this match. But at the same time, I thought the build to the clean finish was actually really well done. Cena did actually dominate the last 2 minutes, if nothing else, rather than just catching a quick one at the finish. That sort of thing happened far too often before and since. But Cena just hit all his moves, unloaded the barrel, and then that was enough for him to win, which, if you're looking at it from a sporting perspective, which I try to do perhaps too often, would actually work. Edge tried everything, didn't get everywhere in those 30 minutes. Cena's just able to go bam, 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 and that's enough to get the very clean win. A note I didn't make because it's a negative, but I do need to say it. I hated that both during this match and in the ensuing 3 weeks, they called Edge a transitional champion. In kayfabe, that terminology just doesn't work. Why would somebody who's won a belt be a transitional champ? It doesn't make sense. Just being too smart for its own good. Had to get that in there. The match, it was Edge. I say it was Edge doing stuff for 13 minutes until Cena did everything that at that point he could do to a decent pop at the end. I went 2.5. There's much better to come from these guys, but nothing intrinsically or specifically bad. But it flatlined from first bell to end, really. Never threatened to get any better, because at this point, I don't think it could get any better.
I went 2.5 as. Yeah, wasn't it? It was just there to fill time, which these two, like you say, they're capable of so much better. You know, do we consider this sort of 2005-2007 period like peak Edge?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
08's really good too.
Yeah,
he is.
This whole run 2000, the mid 2000s, it's right up there with some of the best. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned the crowd not turning on Cena as well, Rory. They weren't quite as hip to the rumours. What pay per view was it where he faced Angle and they absolutely ripped on him? I want to say it was Unforgiven 05.
Unforgiven, yeah.
Yeah, Unforgiven. That's right.
It was that plays into how good a heel Edge was at this point. Yeah, it was just. Like I say, 2.5 stars. It was just a match that was there. Mentioned Unforgiven 06 already. That TLC match. We know what's coming from these two. But we also get a backstage interview with Todd Grisham, where he tries to interview Edge and Lita after the loss, which does include a great Waldo line from Edge. Cena, though, has managed to get somebody in to help with his championship celebration, which is our good friend Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He gets to say ho a lot to Lita. I can't do it as well as some others, but you know, you all know how Hacksaw says ho. It's not very nice to Lita. She's been inducted into the Smell Club tonight. You know, we should be trying to be positive to the woman.
This appearance, I literally put, what the fuck? Why is Duggan even here? And he's wearing these like really ugly blue shorts that huggers. I mean, just awful. And the last note I made on is it just feels like he made the title match hokey. Like you just had this title match, Edge lost. Now you have Duggan here calling Lita a hoe, and it feels like they just wiped out Edge's whole title run as a joke with Duggan, kind of like Rory said about a transitional champion. Now you have Duggan here to shit all over it too. This was terrible.
Oh no, this was during Duggan's great period where he was teaming with Super Crazy, trying to Americanize him. You don't remember
oh,
that?
Oh, Jesus.
Logan's watched far too much mid-2000s WWE.
I don't even remember
Duggan's. I barely remember crazy. That.
Honestly, I don't even remember our next match, so.
So, speaking of our next match, it is the main event of the evening, which, as we've said, is not the Royal Rumble. It is, in fact, Kurt Angle versus Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight title. There's a great Kurt interview before the match where he highlights Henry's strength, but he also reminds everybody he is Kurt freaking Angle, which I love it when he says it like that. This pay-per-view is pre-2008, so we all know this version of Henry absolutely sucks. So we're pretty sure the match is not going to be very good. And, Logan, it wasn't very good.
Oh no, it was very, very bad. Yeah, Henry comes out to the most generic. I talked about how generic Ashley's music was. It was Henry's was even worse. That and pairing him with Daivari kind of didn't exactly scream main eventer to me. So, but Angle obviously kind of tries to chop the big tree down and goes for his legs early. But Henry kind of cuts him off at any point where he tries to go for it with his power. I made the note that the crowd is kind of toast at this point. They don't seem to be into this match, and I don't blame them. But I think they're kind of worn out because they had to go through the Rumble already. I made the note that Mark Henry gives me some major 1995 Mabel vibes here. Like, he's in a position, he's a big guy, so he's kind of in a position because he's big and not because he's actually really talented, but they just kind of needed somebody to break up the, you know, time period between here and Mania. But yeah, he's very out of his territory at this point, you know, kind of after years of being a goof on television with all the sexual chocolate and the D'Lo being partners with D'Lo Brown and all that kind of stuff. So kind of out of his league. But Angle being able to hit a German suplex on Henry, I thought was really impressive. Angle hits some pretty brutal chair shots to Daivari and Henry. He hits two in a row on Henry, and they make an absolutely gross sound. But Angle kind of pulling out all the stops, doing anything he can to win, and kind of even using the rope to as leverage to win the match eventually, showed how desperate he was. But yeah, this match just wasn't very good. And just for Angle, I'll give it a half a star, but it was very, very, very not good.
Very, very, very not good. I like that. We're gonna keep that. Rory, as great as Kurt Angle is, he proves he's no miracle worker in this case.
He's human after all, is Kurt Angle. He's not. Yes. Let's cut to the quick here. Half a star as well on this one. Not going to waste too much time because, unsurprisingly, not too many notes of a positive bent for this one. I have got a basic but effective strategy to go for the legs that Logan mentioned. He has at least put some thought into this match. Mark Henry had nothing whatsoever on offense at this point, but Angle does his best to make nothing look like it could at least break an egg on a good day. I noted some very polite commentary from Taz here. Mark Henry at his own pace. Well, quite.
Yeah, a glacial pace.
I thought the counter to the ankle lock was as smooth as it could have been, all things considered, and we did at least mercifully get the right result. But half a star from me. Angle was game for this one, but I don't think anybody would have minded if he hadn't. Just a nothing of a main event. It's not good enough for any pay-per-view, let alone a big four. Not even close. Nowhere near good.
And it's always good when there's a very audible, boring chant. You know, that shows you how into it the crowd are. We covered Sean on a previous episode of Salad, Kurt's debut match, and we said it was the perfect debut match. We only gave it a star. I get the feeling this might be the worst match of Kurt's career since that opening match, though.
Oh, no doubt. I went 3/4 of a star, but, you know, a couple of things to think about. So just remember, we're with like, first off, this has no right to be anywhere near the main event of a Royal Rumble. Henry's clearly not ready, even though he's been with the damn company 10 years. he looks like a big ball of jelly. The other thing you need to understand, Kurt is at that peak fried. He's about to, like, in a few, he'll be gone in like 6 months. I think it is, right? It's right after the ECW start. Yeah.
Yes.
So he's at that peak, coked out. He's fried. He's intense. You can see the intensity, the veins just popping out on him. Almost like he's coked out of his mind here during the interview. But, you know, if Kurt Angle can't make you look good, even coked out, fried Kurt Angle make you look good, you know you're bad. And this was just so bad. That you're right, the German on Henry looked great. The angle slam I thought looked really good. The chair shots were sick. So yeah, he was kind of pulling out all the stops, but I felt like the ending was cheap and very un-angle-like to me. And I hated it. I'm with you guys. I just thought it was terrible. But I did go 3/4 of a star for Kurt trying to do what he could to get something out of this big freaking train wreck. But yeah, not good. And it's unfortunate because I know – the next month pay-per-view, we get a hell of a good main event with Kurt, and it's unfortunate we got this one at the Rumble.
He's not a miracle worker, bless him. The roll up was awful, but you know, I'm gonna put that on Henry rather than Angle. I went half a star as well. Sean though does mention the fact that the next month is a pretty damn good match, and we get the opening build to that straight after that. Actually, they don't waste any time by bringing the Undertaker straight out to get that the bad taste of that match out from the fans before they go home. He comes out with the Druids and some chariots, though, which I thought was quite an interesting choice. Taker signals that he wants the title belt. Then we get some really cheesy lightning effects, Rory. And then the ring which causes the ring to collapse, which is, I'm guessing, why this match had to be the main event.
I think so. And yes, had doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Love the fact that Undertaker, being as he is, can just get a title shot by rubbing his hands along his waist.
But why would they do that match at the Rumble, though? Minutes.
So say again?
Why wouldn't they do the Taker match at the Rumble as the main event? Why save it for No Way Out? Yeah, what was the point?
Yep, got me there. Yeah, yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Just a thought. That's what I was thinking about it.
Jeez, but the effects, much like Cena's spaceship, early years, I think were working their magic at that point.
He was still making sure he didn't have hepatitis from the Armageddon match with Bob Orton.
Oh, maybe that's right. He was recovering from the hepatitis. Thank you for clarifying that.
Just a guess.
So I think you might be onto something there, Luke. I think you might be right with that.
P.I. Logan has just broke the story.
just one more thing.
It's the hepatitis.
God damn it, pal.
So we close this show with Kurt looking very confused, but that might just because the coke's wearing off. We're not quite sure at this point. That's the end of this show. It's not the end of our show though, because we've got some awards to give out. First of all, is the best match of the night. I will throw that to our guest, Mr. McNamara. What did you have as the best match of this show?
Yeah, I think it has to be the Rumble match, really, by dint of its very existence. There was the supporting features didn't even come close to it. And what was a very much, despite our positive comments, that's why we're here, very much a bottom end Rumble. It takes best match for me rather easily.
Sean?
Easily the Rumble.
Logan?
Yeah, I'll go with the Rumble as well.
And I'll make it a clean sweep for the Rumble. Worst match, Logan?
Ashley and Mickey, without a doubt.
I think we got some disagreement here. Sean?
Yeah, Logan is wrong. It's clearly Boogeyman and JBL.
Rory, sorry?
It is indeed Boogeyman versus JBL. Right finish to the right person, but still the worst match.
I'm going to go Ashley Mickey, so we're not going to split the tie. We'll just agree to disagree on this one. Okay, most surprising match of the night. And remember, surprising can mean surprisingly good or surprisingly bad, Sean.
For me, I got a double one. How bad I thought Edge and Cena was, but more importantly, how good I thought the Cruiserweight match was.
Okay. Rory?
Yeah, I'll go for the Cruiserweight match as well. I said at the start that they weren't given too many opportunities to show what they could do, but they just thought sod it and snuck a few in anyway. So that was nice. I'll go for the Cruiserweight match.
Logan?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Cruiserweight match as well. It really surprised me opening the show.
Yeah, I liked it as well, to be fair. So we'll go 4-for-4 for that. The next award is our Lenny Lane Award for the biggest shit take of the night. Let's go to the king of the shit take. Sean, what was your...
Well, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of shit takes tonight. I mean, Logan and I agreed on quite a few things. So, but I will have to say that you and Logan get the shit take of the night for making the female match your worst match of the night.
Logan?
And right back at you for making Boogie and JBL the worst match of the night and giving freaking Ashley and Mickey three quarters of a star.
That's really nice. That's really nice of you to make our guest a part of that. I don't think
sorry, Rory. I respect you as a podcast legend, but you're just wrong this one time.
Oh. just in time. That was close, Logan.
No. Rory, I apologize. You had to get lumped into my shit take. I apologize.
And what do you reckon, Rory, about what's your shit take of the night?
Well, I'm going to turn my eye on the host because I can and say the shit take of the night is your love for Tatanka, Ben. And
oh, yes!
harsh but fair, I think.
Well done. Very well done, Rory.
It's an inexplicable love. I will freely admit to that.
You know what? I'm gonna back out and I'm gonna give you that shit take too. Rory convinced me.
Oh yeah. Just gang up on me. That's fine.
I won't do that.
Thank you, Logan. Next award is our fashion.
What was your shit take of the night?
My shit take was led to for you know with the whole boogeyman thing. I'm with you.
Okay, I got you.
Next award is our fashion statement of the night. Logan, I will stick with you.
There really wasn't a bunch, but I'm just going to give it to the McMahons in their Roman attire. We kind of pointed out how hot Stephanie was earlier, but I'll give it to the Roman McMahons.
Sean?
Yeah, if I was going to go for the positive, it'd be hot Roman Stephanie, but because I pot for her big time and forgot she was here, I'm going to go with Shelton's mama's Moo-Moo.
And Rory?
Well, it's Mickey, isn't it? Need I say more?
Oh, yes.
Solid pick.
Trish
in the ref outfit, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was my pick, so yeah, I had Trish's ref outfit. And the most important award of the night, Sean. Is this show chicken salad or chicken shit?
This show is chicken shit. Now, again, solid opener, solid rumble, but not one of the greatest. And the rest of the matches are just filler and clutter and house showish and terrible. So definite chicken shit for me.
Rory?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I think we did our best with this one. We found more positives than perhaps we probably really, this show really deserved. We work far too hard here, don't we? Now, what do I mean? You 3 over the last 7 months, I felt I had to do a lot to live up to, even me being ever the positive one on this show, but I was beaten back by a lot of it. And I'll throw this out there. I don't think it's a true all-time bad WWE pay-per-view. It's down there, but I could think of a lot worse.
Yes.
Which you will get to at some point. I do think it's a very strong contender for worst Rumble pay-per-view, however.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's quite bland in parts. What about you, Logan?
Well, due to my love for Royal Rumbles, I'm going to give it a slight salad and get with me on this analogy. It smells kind of bad before you eat it. It tastes all right while you're eating it. But after you're done with it, the aftertaste is kind of nasty as well. So there's a little bit of salad in the middle, but it's kind of stinky and tastes bad on each side of it. So that's the best way I can describe it. That's my best analogy for the night. But I'll give it a salad just because it's a Rumble, and I'm just a huge fan of the Rumble. So I'll give it slight salad.
I'm a huge fan of the Rumble, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to go with the boys and say shit.
It's understandable. The Rumble's
okay, and then the other five matches just do not hold up to an okay Rumble. If it's like a 2000 show where you've got two or three great matches along with the Rumble, then yeah. But unfortunately, this show never any match on this show ever reaches anything off that level.
I really just wanted to use that analogy. I'm not gonna lie to you.
it's a great
it was
analogy.
A very good analogy, Logan.
I liked it. And our final thing is our chicken salad league table, where we rank the shows from worst to best. Sitting atop of the league table is Four Brawl 99, second Survivor Series 99. 99 has a very rough showing at the moment. Then King of the Ring 95, Great American Bash 91, Halloween Havoc 98, Starrcade 89 and SummerSlam 93. Rory, where would you place this show amongst those seven?
SummerSlam 93 is your quote unquote best so far.
Yes, so it goes worst to best.
Let's work up through the list. I think it's worse than SummerSlam 93. What's next?
Starrcade 89.
Yeah, it's worse than that.
Then Halloween Havoc 98.
Worse than that.
And then we get to the Great American Bash 91.
I think you'd be too kind for that. That does have some unintentional comedic value, but I do think the Rumble match is better than anything on there. So, yes, I think Great American Bash is just worse.
Consider the six-man on that, and the Luger win the match isn't bad either.
But there's nothing as bad.
Great American Bash 91, the first show I ever watched on the network. So,
oh, wow.
Just think about that one for a minute. But I do think that's a little worse than Rumble. What a way to start. Get it out of the way. But yes, I do think it's slightly worse show than Rumble 06. So I would put Rumble 06 there, personally.
And there's
That's where I would put it, too.
Yes, I'd have it there, because there's nothing as bad as a scaffold match or One Man Gang in El Gigante.
That's like the greatest match of all time, according to Logan. But,
well, that is true.
Get El Gigante's name out of your mouth there.
See, I'll go with what you guys said, but I had it right above. I have it as the new number four going down. So I went Fall Brawl, Survivor Series, King of the Ring. Then I have Rumble, then Bash. So you just flip-flopped it. But I'm okay with that either way. It makes sense.
Okay. It's great. So we'll keep it in mid-table in the number five slot.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Fabulous. Well, thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. We will get to the plugs, and we're going to let our guest plug first, Mr. McNamara.
Thank you very much for having me on, gentlemen. Absolute pleasure to talk positivity where none can be found for 2 hours. Speaking of which, you can find me outside of the realm of the Place to Be Nation on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, where, as the name would suggest, me and my merry crew, maybe not quite so merry with some of the shows we have been doing recently, look at all things pro wrestling from 20 years ago. We have separate shows each month for the WWF and for WCW and ECW, but both of those are, of course, not long for this world. Available here at the Place to Be Nation, you can hear me on Senior Video every month, where I look at a selection from the Home Video Classic section of the WWE Network with a rolling review of guests. The latest show will be dropping tomorrow as you hear this, so do check that one out. And also, there is another podcast you might have heard about on the Place to Be Nation network called, I don't know, The Mothership or something. Just maybe listen out for that one over the next couple of days as well. Tell them I told you.
Ooh, you tease.
Whatever can it mean?
Ooh, as he strokes the beard. Sean, what would you like to plug while you're here?
So NWA Crack and Roll, let's see, episode 8 should be dropping a few days after this. And our boy Logan will be on there with me for episode 8 and 9 because we are going bi-weekly starting this month instead of once a month. So Logan will be on with us to look at October of 85. So Logan, looking forward to having you on. I know you don't know Crockett very well, so that should be a fun, entertaining show with us, Dr. G, and your guys is a co-host on Special Relations, Colin McDougal. And then I also look forward to November 85. In February, we're actually going to have Rory on too. So I'm kind of rounding out the Special Relations group. So look forward to having him on too. And then the only other thing right now I can think of is the Pop Goes the Classics. I'll let Logan talk about the other one, but Pops Goes to Classics. I know we just completed Mandalorian last month, and Cobra Kai is about to start, and I believe we're going to be doing Pop Goes to Couch, actually. We'll be doing a series on Cobra Kai, and then eventually going into WandaVision when that debuts too, with Annie, myself, Scott Shiflett, and of course any rotating guest that likes to come on to that show. So that's what we got going on.
Excellent. Logan?
Yeah, as Sean said, I'll be on Crock and Roll with him. I'm looking forward to that as well. It's kind of a like you said, a period I'm not really super familiar with. The next episode of Highway to the Impact Zone probably should be out by the point you hear this. It'll be on our first set of shows after the weekly pay-per-view, so we're finally out of the weekly pay-per-views. So hopefully things will start to get a little bit better, but I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one. I'm actually also going to be on Blockbuster Rewind for January. We're going to be watching the Shrek series, so I'm looking forward to being on with those guys. Those are some movies that are kind of right in my wheelhouse of growing up. Looking forward to looking at those movies and talking to those guys about it. So me and Roger have a show coming up on the No-So feed, but I'll hold off on announcing what that is for a little bit.
Excellent. I've got a couple of things to plug. Let's go. Special Relations dropped on Boxing Day, the 26th, where the four of us and Callum and Scott and Tim Cable all watched SummerSlam 89, and a great drunken time was had by all. I think we got very,
very drunk.
Very, very, very
while plugging every single show on the feed. Also, you could hear me as a host on Making Mount Rushmore, which was a lot of fun with Sean, Andy, and Roger. I had a great time doing that.
You did a great job on that, Ben.
Thanks, mate.
You're welcome.
Also, catch me on Twitter at BenL1981, or you can also catch us on the Special Relations Twitter feed handle, which is at PTBNSpecialRel1. That's it for the plugs. Logan, you have the pick for next reviewing for the good people.
We are going to be looking at No Way Out 2003. It's the second Scott Steiner Triple H match, and it's the second Rock Hogan match. So those are pretty well panned in the history of WWE. So I'm looking forward to looking at that one.
Ooh, that's going to be a rough stretch.
Ooh, that's going to be a rough one.
Go on, Sean.
I was gonna say we don't make it easy. We're not supposed to make it easy on ourselves. So,
so for Logan and Sean, I'm Ben, and I would also like to thank Rory for joining us tonight, for staying up late. I know you're not exactly a midnight oil person, Rory. So thank you
not
so
really,
much.
Not really. No. I will be in bed by the time you have pressed stop on this recording, probably. So there you go.
Don't worry, mate. I'm not going to be very far behind you. Don't worry. And that's it for now. So thank you very much, Rory. Thank you very much, Sean. Thank you, Logan. And remember, everybody, in a world where you could be anything that you want to be kind. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next month on Chicken Salad.